Goodman, Veal One. So if then I could ask you first of all, sure. You know, about your background in Krakow, this was before the war started. Could you tell me something about your family and the lifestyle there?
Well, my mother and father were young. I had young parents. We lived in a street which, in fact, was not in the Jewish quarter. And my mother considered herself a very emancipated woman. And it's what, even as a small child, it somehow came through. She herself was born in a small town called Jaworzyce, which was about 60 kilometers from Krakow, which in fact was what they called Congress Poland. There was a big difference, and that I remember too as a child, between the people who originally were from Krakow, which was Galicia, which in fact at one time was under Austrian occupation, and the ones who came from what was Russian occupation, who were much less well educated than the Galician part. So even so that I was born in Krakow, my father came from Lodz, and my mother came from Jaworzyce. So they were, if you like, that new immigrants in this rather sophisticated town, and they did not live in the Jewish quarter. I do remember when my grandfather left, and he lived in the Jewish quarter, and actually graphically very well remember a flat which was my grandfather's flat, which was more like council flats here, with a sort of terrace going on. There was a courtyard and a terrace going round, and the front door, I think they did something like on the second floor, the front door would have given onto this terrace. Where we lived, it was quite a bourgeois, and there were sort of nice buildings, and we were near Plante, which was, remember, the sort of gardens in Krakow. Now, my father was born in 1910, and my mother in 1912, and they were both eldest children in their respective families, whose mother died when they were actually very young. My mother's mother died when she was 10. Father remarried and then had a child. When my paternal grandfather remarried, and I think as far as I know, had two more children, but they lived in Lodz while my maternal grandfather left this Jaworzyce, his own hometown, obviously to better his economic situation, and lived in Krakow. I remember when the Germans marched in, or rather, when they marched in. I remember vividly hearing a band with onlookers, and I was very, very impressed because, in fact, they were on horses, and there were these enormous drums on each side of the horse, and I thought they were actually all rather splendid. Then I had my mother's elder sister worked nearby to us. But somehow there was a change. I think even her working, where she was working, time somehow had changed. So was it already some sort of workshop, and she worked in that workshop because it was the war? I mean, that these details I don't remember. I remember going to kindergarten. Again, rereading my mother's story. She said that we actually left Krakow and went to Jaworzyce, which is her own hometown, at the creation of the Krakow ghetto. Now, I don't. That is something which obviously is very easy to find out when the Krakow ghetto was created. So you could say till we went to this Jaworzyce, besides hearing these. This band coming in, and maybe my aunt's workshop where she worked. I did not. I can't tell you when the war actually, in fact, started. See, my father did leave us for a while, and then came back again. But that I remember only very, very vaguely. Now, I remember they were the flat we lived in, and, you know, my husband always says, oh, you remember, because photographs, obviously there were no photographs of the interior of that flat, and I remember my mother died in 1981, and at one time, a drawing of the interior of the flat, and she said, you know, extraordinary that I remembered it so well. So if we did leave at the end of 39, I was actually very small indeed, and I do remember being even pushed in a pushchair and losing a shoe, and I remember the kindergarten, which actually, looking back, was actually quite idyllic, this this playgroup, if you like, I belonged to, and there were children I was friendly with in the street, so I was obviously an only child at the time. Now the flat was on the ground floor, and it must have been a conversion, because the whole flat consisted of actually the kitchen. There was some sort of partition, which in fact was a toilet. There was obviously no bathroom. And then you entered another room, which in fact was a bedroom. Now, the bedroom actually was a bedroom with a big double bed and an enormous wardrobe. My father was self-employed, and I think all his goods were in this enormous wardrobe. But even so, it was a rather nice bourgeois area, so it must have been a conversion. So it was on the ground floor, and there was also a courtyard, but I think you came from the street, and in the sort of the arch, before you go to the courtyard, was the entrance. And you actually entered, as far as I remember, you entered straight into the kitchen. There was sort of no corridor at all. As far as I remember, being told that my father left Lodge, was employed at one time, and then became self-employed. And my parents married in 33, I was born in 35. And now my mother did help. My mother sort of worked, and she actually went around with me, sort of in this pushchair, going to visit shops. So she was a bit like commercial traveller, if you like. So my father, I think, imported the goods from Lodge, which was quite a big manufacturing centre, and then sold them. But I think he must have been a very entrepreneurial. He, I understand, was not a particularly good student in school, but had his little lottery he ran. I mean, that was sort of family thing, but as a child, he ran a lottery for other children, and then he also had a little stock of writing exercise books, so he had it. Again, living in England now, you hardly can imagine there was a country in Europe where such a thing was possible before the war, but it was very, very much of a third world country, as you know. It is Poland. Lodge was actually quite poor. I understand that my grandmother, paternal grandmother, cost the family a lot of money because of giving birth to her last child, and she had repercussions from that birth, and I must have been in the 20s. So my the surviving out of my father's, who died very recently, told me how they were actually relatively well off till the mother became ill. Now, both my grandparents, by some sheer coincidence, were both dealing in hats, the Jewish hats. Again, it's very difficult to imagine that somebody could earn a livelihood only dealing in Jewish hats. So my paternal grandfather, the one in Lodz, had actually a small shop. You know, with this, what they call stramo, the hats with fur around them, and the yarmulkes. And my my mother's father dealt in hats. They were not particularly Jewish hats, but they were felt hats, so maybe they were more worn by Jews. He actually was also quite entrepreneurial. He was self-employed and bought seconds from factories, so he had a sort of like concession buying seconds from factories, making them good and then reselling them. So he was actually an artisan and con businessman, but worked from at home.
Did you have any consciousness of being Jewish and being different from other children in the kindergarten, if it wasn't A solely Jewish one. Did
it
you
could have been actually a Jewish one, but I really just wasn't aware. I mean, there was, I don't remember, trying to remember now, even thinking about it, if I remember that there was a demarcation in any way whatsoever. But it's quite possible that the people who were around us were actually, were in fact, the majority would have been Jewish. So I would say before we went into this town of Jaroshitze, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. But I would also say that even living in that small town, what I do remember very well, in the small town even more than in Krakow, because obviously I became a little bit older. Now, according to my mother's notes, we lived nearly 2 years in Jaroshitze. Now, somehow why I think we survived at this enormous odds is because A, my parents were very non-conformist. I mean, why, when everybody went into the ghetto, and obviously, don't forget, in those days, who would have thought that anybody wanted to kill you? I mean, why should they want to kill you? Ghettos have existed in the Middle Ages, so the Germans, maybe one friend, were going to go back in time and stopping the Jews having the freedom they used to have. But actually, that they would want to make them all live in one area. But why kill them? And why didn't my parents take the easiest way out, I would have thought, which would have been to go into the ghetto? They didn't. They didn't. So they went into that small town, but neither did my grandfather. So my mother's father and sisters, the whole family, in fact, were in that small town. Now, the small town was really basically, I don't remember. I mean, I remember somehow vaguely Germans with boots being threatening, but I can't tell you that it was the time before we went to Jaroshitze and during the time in Jaroshitze, but if there was a threat at all, it was a very, very, very minor one. So, in fact, my own life as a child actually went on being quite normal till we left this Jaroshitze. So all the time in Jaroshitze, it had something like 13,000 Jews, 13,000 inhabitants, out of which 11,000 were Jews. That means that the 2,000 non-Jews spoke Yiddish because that was their language. And that town I remember very, very well. And I mean, I was very happy there. I mean, I remember the room that we moved in. All right, it was not as comfortable as the flat we left behind. But, I mean, to a small child, it didn't seem to matter at all. I mean, I was quite amazed to arrive in a place which had no electricity. So in Jaroshitze, the flat we had was one room, and the kitchen was within that room. It had no electricity. From what I can gather, that if it had had electricity, it wasn't such an old building, if it had had electricity, there would have been a much higher taxes to pay. Again, viewed today, it seems quite incredible that in the late 30s, there would be a building who wouldn't have electricity. Now, my mother remembers actually when electricity came into the town. I remember her telling me. Now, there was a river, and again, I have a very, very vivid recollection, which in fact was a shtetl. Now, I'm 56 years old now. It seems quite incredible looking back that I would have experienced a shtetl life, which was during the war and actually relatively unaffected till I left it.
Could you explain what a shtetl is?
A small town which mainly it was situated in the Pale of Settlements. As you know, the Jews had to live in a particular area in eastern Poland. So there were small towns, as I said, which were predominantly Jewish, where the language, in fact, was Yiddish. Now, Yiddish was spoken in my family, but not basically to me. From what I can gather, my mother felt that Polish was really the language. She, being an emancipated woman, the family knew that one would speak Polish to me. And I don't think that Polish was so good, because the story went, since my father married my mother, or since he knew her, his Polish had improved. So my mother was the one who read, and she sort of prided herself. I mean, that obviously I was told later, prided herself of being the one who bought the newspaper and who read Polish newspapers, not just English newspapers, and who spoke Polish very well without sort of a Jewish accent in it, and my father so much less so. But so I in fact did not speak Yiddish, but obviously I understood it. But Polish was the language one would speak to me. Food. Apparently my maternal grandfather thought that my mother was nourishing me very badly by giving me these vegetables. I mean, that really was, you know, so my mother made a point of me, you know, and food, which were actually terribly expensive because there was some sort of tax on our own. Okay, so there was a big ritual, which actually I remember me having my sort of orange bag was actually something very, very special. But my mother did her duty by it. My mother was sort of an overweight, but I remember she was sort of prided herself in being well dressed, overweight. I think my mother always was somehow overweight. Now it turned out that my mother was not particularly maternal, but it's very difficult to sort of say, you know, who is maternal, who's not so maternal. I don't think she was the sort of typical Yiddish mother with, you know, oozing with warmth. So she was, with her sort of emancipation, I think a fairly cool person who did the right thing by me by feeding me properly in Polish language instead of Yiddish, and she was going to go forward in life. Now, the Jewish, I must have been actually quite happy in this Jewish too, because I remember it being sunny. You know, when one looks back on things, it was always sort of summer, and it was sunny. And I remember that one moved around in the family group. So that it would have been, obviously, would have been the Sabbath, and then one put one's very good clothes on, and one would go visiting. I remember a wedding. I remember a wedding very well, and that was the wedding of my mother's cousin who married her sister. Her sister was called Manya. And I remember it was in sort of very low ceiling. It felt more like sort of rooms in a loft. Very low ceiling, high up somewhere, but there was a fiddler. My aunt was dressed in white, and that all was taking place during the war. I sort of my first encounter with animals like a calf, and apparently I was just said, oh, what an enormous dog, but in fact it was a calf. Now, there was no electricity, and that's something which really impressed me, that one was able to light, I don't know if you remember ever seeing them, by solid alcohol. It was some sort of solid fuel which gave off a light. So this was our life. Now, I remember Friday evenings, to this day actually, I love vodka. And so you can make a benediction over wine on a Friday evening. Instead of being wine, you can actually use a spirit. And obviously it must have been vodka, so there would have been a drop left at the bottom of the glass, which I would sort of lick. And I still, you know, I've liked vodka ever since, which I'm sure is a recollection. My father did travel on business, so somehow even so it would, well, you know, he had to somehow scrape a living, and he was quite entrepreneurial. He would leave Jawoszyce. Would he go back to Krakow at the time to do business and come back? Again, according to my mother's story, he did do that. And now, the other thing I remember very well is they were very happily married. Because you know, they would kiss, so obviously they were quite demonstrative as a couple, and I've always known it was a sort of a love marriage. And my mother met my father at her father's home. Somehow there was an introduction of my father coming from Lodz to Kraków to do business as a young man, and then being employed again, an introduction. Now everybody was religious. They were not Hasidim, you know, which is sort of this ultra-Orthodox and anti-intellectual side to Jewish community. So I know that my grandfather, my mother said, was actually anti this Hasidim. I don't know if you know that they were sort of not intellectual. It was sort of religion through joy rather than through learning. Yes, and the traditional Jews were much more through learning and books, and there were sages. But they, everybody was religious. I mean, everybody sort of, the Sabbath was kept, I think, as far as I know, by a great majority of people.
Were the synagogues open throughout this period, because we're going in now, I think, to the 1940s, aren't we?
Well, that's right, let's say, according to my mother, which was late 39, so that would have been the whole 1940 and some of 1941. I remember the synagogue. There was actually quite a large, impressive synagogue. Now, as you know, Jews can pray, if there are 10 men, they can form a congregation, so they're called shtibel. Now, my father had a good singing voice and obviously had good enough a knowledge of Hebrew to be able to pray in front of a congregation. But as far as I know, he did do that not in the main synagogue, which would have had a rabbi, but in what is called a shtibel, instead of private prayer house. Now, I remember Saturday mornings, my mother was a big reader. So I remember in this Jewishness, my mother reading, me being quite bored, needing somebody to play with, not having anybody to play with, and by golly, she was going to go and read her book. And then I remember, oh yes, I remember very well. So my father would have gone to synagogue, and obviously the women did not, maybe went and joined them on holidays, Jewish holidays, rather than on a Saturday morning. Maybe their religious families, they did, but I know that my mother obviously didn't spend time with cooking. Was done, as you know, was not done on the Saturday, and she would read, and I'm sure there was a Polish novels or whatever she read.
It's interesting, you know, listening to you look back, because obviously you seem to be doing it through your child's eyes. It seems very normal sort of life.
It was. I mean, it was an out of, I mean, I think that it was actually a happy one, and the fact that we lived in one room and there was no electricity and there was no toilet, I mean, I think as far as the toilets was further out. I do remember some commotions, but, you know, I've not talked about them very much. So, I mean, the main lines of my childhood, I remember very vividly. The other things, having not very much talked about it, I've not been sort of did not perpetuate the memory of it. One of the reasons I have not talked about it very much is that my own husband lost both his parents in deportation. And as much as I actually feel quite happy to talk about it, he gets very unhappy. And he doesn't want, his attitude is, he doesn't want to be singled out as belonging to people who have been particularly persecuted. I amongst them. So, you know, I will tell the story, but as I said, I think that after dinner story, I would have told that story much more often had I had a husband who would have not discouraged it, never mind encouraging. Again, reading my mother's notes, I do remember that there was some sort of raid, but I don't see the people in front of me. And they came and found a room next to the room we were renting, and there was a petition, and they took the petition down, and there were goods. There were goods in the room, if you like, next door, which we, in fact, then never used. I mean, that I do remember. We lived in that one room, and somehow this petition was taken down, but maybe the rest of it was more like a loft. And our landlord had goods which he stored there and put behind that petition, obviously without a door, and somebody must have sort of told on him. But according to my mother's notes, we also had goods which we had actually put in some sort of double ceiling, and they were not discovered. Now, one of the reasons, actually probably the main reason why my mother and I survived, is that my father and she, let's say, because they were working together, were able to sell all the goods in time and being able to actually have foreign exchange, which would have been dollars and jewelry, which actually seems quite extraordinary if you really think about it. A, being a jump ahead, A, not going into the ghetto, and B, to have had somehow the foresight to be able to sell the goods, and then maybe as he was doing business, he actually did not store goods, but in fact the gains were immediately converted. So I would have thought that they were both actually particularly intelligent in the true sense of the word, sort of the survival of the fittest. But according to people who survived the war, it wasn't the only element. I mean, one element was actually just being at the right place at the right time. Some people went to the right and they went to the desk, and vice versa. And you literally just basically did not know. Now, we left Jaroslavl literally at the eve of the deportation. So that whole town was, in fact, deported. Now, the other thing which, again, you can find out, when Jaroslavl, which actually is a well-known Jewish town, because if you, you know, there is even an association of ex-Jaroslavl inhabitants in Israel today, where there was, you know, a handful of survivors have met up, I suppose they're sort of dying out now. When was the deportation? Now, my mother has this cousin whose wedding I went to in that loft, marrying this sister of my mother's called Manya, which actually was Miriam. And we visited him some months ago and sort of asked him, you know, about the date. And his wife, who survived concentration camp, and so did he remarried, because my aunt never survived. And we just actually at the end had to laugh because he got completely jumbled up, and that was an adult, and he was completely jumbled up about the dates. Well, I really thought he was deported from that town, from this Jaroslavl, so that he actually would know exactly the date that he didn't. It probably was in 42. Now, according to my mother, again, the notes which I've just been reading, that my mother says in these notes that my father met somebody who told him that there were some horrific happenings in the surrounding areas, and that he himself must have got wind from this person or maybe others he met, because he did go and travel and did not stay in the small town. And it's quite extraordinary that he would have left that town literally at the end. And I do remember the commotion again as a child, that my mother didn't want to leave because she had heard, I mean, that's something which I knew later, that some elderly people were arrested and the ransom was being paid. There was a lot of question of ransom, a lot of, that you probably know from reading yourself, that the Germans demanded from the community, heads of the community, so much money for whatever. And so that she felt that if she was around, she would be able to, if such a thing happened, would be able to buy her father out of the situation. So there was a commotion, and that was sort of came down in the story of the family, that my father said to my mother, well, I will go to the rabbi, and the rabbi will decide if you should follow your husband, because I want you to come along. I don't want to go and leave Jaroslavl on my own. And whatever the rabbi will say will go. And apparently the rabbi said that yes, that the wife should follow her husband. Well, in fact, when he came, he said, no, the rabbi said the contrary. I mean, that's something which was sort of told in the family. So we left this Jaroslavl. And I remember the journey. I mean, I do remember the journey. Now, I do have sort of a slightly guilty feeling, and sort of I remember physically what it felt like to have my father's young brother, who was not much older than myself, rescued from Warsaw Ghetto. So how did they went from Lodz to Warsaw? But anyhow, that boy happened to be in the Warsaw Ghetto. I think maybe a couple of children went from my father's family. Again, like vague memory that somehow they happened to be in Warsaw, and my father managed to get that child out, and he was staying with us. But he was obviously very emaciated, and I found him, and obviously had problems communicating with me, and I'm sure I wasn't particularly nice to him or didn't particularly befriend him. He was a sort of like a foreigner. He did stay with us till the deportation, and he's not a boy. We did not take him along with us, and he stayed back. Now, boys were much more dangerous because, as you know, they were circumcised, and it was very easy then to tell. But anyhow, he stayed with the rest of the family. The able-bodied man, like my cousin Herman, my mother's cousin Herman, who now lives in Germany, and his brother, they both actually survived. They came from quite a large family from a nearby town called Kielce. And then they left this Kielce to come to Jaroslavl as well. So he was they were actually able to go to work. Now the story is that my grandfather, he was, my grandfather must have been in his 50s, and he was not an old man, that they showed their hands. The people who were sort of middle age, if you like, if they had worked with their hands, it would sort of show that they were workers. And these, the Germans, would then send with the younger men, but the ones who didn't work with their hands, went with the women and the children.